Hi, and welcome to the second module of our software engineering course. In this first substance module, we're going to talk about what software engineering is and why it's important. In addition to that, we will also briefly discuss the ethics of software engineering and being a software engineer. As you can see here in my courses, the module has three readings, one chapter in the book and two papers. The book chapter provides a basic overview of the field of software engineering, as well as the discussion of software engineering ethics that I will cover later in this video lecture. The first paper that I have put for you to read in my courses is a classic in our field. It's a very famous paper entitled No Silver Bullet, and it discusses the inherent problems of software engineering and why it is difficult to find single solutions that will solve those problems. This is a very nice read, this paper, and though it's old, it's still relevant, and I hope that you find it very enjoyable. The second paper is really short. It's a short two-pager discussing one of the most well-known failures in software engineering, the Ariane 5 rocket, which blew up shortly after being launched, mainly due to problems in software engineering. After you have done the readings, it's time for you to do the quiz. As I discussed in the previous modules, you will have two takes or max 30 minutes each to do the quiz, and the grade from the better of your attempts will be your final grade. The questions are randomly selected from a large question bank each time, so don't expect to get the same questions in both takes, or even the same questions as other students get. However, don't worry. If you have studied the material, you should have no problems at all with the quiz. Your final task this week is to write an essay. The exact instructions are in the My Courses system, and the deadline for both the quiz and the essay is next Monday at 8:00 in the morning. So it's a good idea to start working early, perhaps even a little bit before Sunday night. But with that said, now I think it's time to jump into the actual substance and start talking about what software engineering is all about. Enjoy! So let's start with what software engineering is all about. Software engineering, first of all, is an engineering discipline that is concerned with all aspects of software engineering. So we talk about everything from understanding what kind of software we want to build until taking it into use or even retiring it, that is taking it out of use when we stop using an old system. So it's from the conception till the end of life of a software system. Software engineering as an engineering discipline means that we try to use appropriate theories and methods to solve the problems we encounter, bearing in mind also financial and organizational constraints. For example, it's very common that we would like to build the perfect piece of software with all possible features. However, in real life, we can't work on a project forever, meaning that we will have to make compromises with respect to quality and with respect to included features. So, while the overall aim, of course, is the overarching goal is to create perfect software, in software engineering, we deal and need to deal with the fact that it's first of all very difficult to understand what a perfect piece of software is. And second, it's impossible or almost impossible to build given the real-world constraints that we need to work with. The fact that we deal with all aspects of software production means that we don't talk only about the technical aspects, that is the coding, the integration, and so on. We also talk about the tools we use in software engineering, the processes we use, how people work together, how we document, and so on. So it's a wide area that we deal with in software engineering. One way we can think about it is that software engineering, that is what you do when you already know how to code, and you need to have people work together to build complex or large or small systems. So why then should we care about software engineering? Why is it important as a discipline? First of all, the fact of life is that most developed nations have societies that in practice are run on software. So most functions, businesses of society are dependent on software. Software is, as we often used to say, it's everywhere. It's in the banks, it's in the all finances, it's in the stores, it's in the administration of a country, and so on. So we are completely reliant on software. And of course, that means that a discipline that deals with how to build software in the real world, to real world requirements, and to real world needs is important. And that is why software engineering is important from the point of view of modern societies. More and more systems are software controlled, even though we don't think about it. We often talk about and joke about the fact that software is even in your toaster, but that is a fact. So also very many small appliances that we need work with, as well as large systems, are software controlled. This is both an asset as well as potential risks. For example, you might have read about the viruses that Stuxnet that destroyed centrifuges in Iran in their nuclear power plants. So these are examples of things that can happen when we have systems controlled by software. Systems that we don't even think of as being vulnerable, for example, can be that due to the fact that they are software controlled. When we talk about software engineering, we talk about professional software development. That is software development done for professional reasons. So this, though of course what we talk about in software engineering, the methods, tools, etc., can be very, very helpful to hobbyists. In software engineering, we talk about software engineering as a professional discipline and things you need to do and methods that are useful when you develop software as a profession. Finally, in addition to society being reliant on software, it's also a fact that software business is huge. It's several hundreds of billions of dollars or euros worldwide annually. It's also a significant contributor to the gross national product of several countries. Also, Finland has, despite the problems we recently heard with Nokia, we have successful software businesses, and the software business segment is actually doing fairly well. Software is also very important when we develop product. Many products that we don't even think of containing software can actually be dominated by software from the point of view of development costs. So, for example, when we buy systems and when we develop systems, the software cost can be a significant factor that we need to deal with. Software systems are typically not developed once and then retired. Instead, we develop them once, we ship them, and then we need to maintain them or improve them and ship new versions. So the cost related to maintaining a software system for maybe tens of years, for example, that happens in the banking industry, meaning that the maintenance costs can actually be a significant part of the overall lifetime cost. Our textbook, it says that software development costs are 60%, testing costs are 40% of the software costs. Always when you see numbers like this, you need to think. These are unfortunately very, very context dependent. So we can show numbers that testing takes a major part. For example, in the telecom industry, it's not at all atypical for software costs, testing costs of software, to be higher than the actual development costs, due to the fact that there are extremely high quality requirements, and testing is difficult and expensive and requires specialized laboratories and hardware. So the testing costs can vary from very small, if you don't test, it doesn't cost, and up to very, very high if you have strict testing requirements and a process that requires strict testing. So take these numbers not as an absolute truth, but as an example. Software engineering is all about cost-effective software development. So we are concerned with developing software given real-world constraints of both cost and time. An interesting aspect of software is that it doesn't wear out. So all physical products, the more we use them, the more they wear out. At some point in time, we need to replace parts, we need to maybe service them, change the oil in the car, and so on. However, software, of course, does not wear by use. Software doesn't get any worse the more we use it. However, looking at the diagram here, in which we can see on the y-axis, we can see the failure rate, that is how often we have problems in the system. Meaning, for example, that the system fails completely, it crashes. So what you can see here is a curve in which the failure rate when we ship a new system is pretty high, often due to problems in testing. So we would expect to find more problems with a new system than with an old one. So you can see here the idealized curve, which basically says that, okay, we might have many problems with the system when we just ship it, but then when it gets used and we correct the problems, then it asymptotically approaches zero. Unfortunately, the actual curve does not look like this at all. You can see it here. What typically happens is that we fix bugs and so on, leading to the initial decline in the number of bugs. However, when we change a software system, there are always the issues of side effects that we will discuss later in the course. But this typically means that when we correct an issue or we make changes to a system, we introduce new problems. And that is what you can see here. We do change the system and then we end up with much more issues, bugs, than we had before. And then we correct those bugs and we go down again. Then we make a new change and we again introduce new problems. A fact of life is that many software development projects fail in practice. We can take some recent examples that you might have heard about. For example, there have been problems with the web bank of Sampo Pankki, now Danske Bank. They had serious issues leading to problems for customers to use and pay using their web bank when they did some upgrades to it. These were widely published. Also publicized were problems that the Finnish Railway company had when they introduced their new ticketing system due to several problems, mainly related to testing. There were time periods in which you couldn't buy tickets at all. This, of course, means that a discipline in which we learn how to do software well, how to do development well, is important and might be able to provide some solutions to things that actually happened. So software engineering, it's basically what's all around the coding. So if you think of yourself as a coder, you need to be technically proficient, but when you need to work on larger systems, when you work in the real world with customers, then software engineering is these other things that you need to do. It's about how to find out what to develop, how to talk to customers, how to structure a big development project, how to design the software system at the architectural level and at the low level, module level. Then it's about how to do the actual implementation, what tools to use. It's about how to ensure the software quality, that you meet your quality requirements, your quality goals. And then it's about how to take the system into use and how to retire it. So software engineering is, in a way, the other things you need to know in addition to coding when developing software in the real world. Many software engineers and people studying software engineering end up as managers. And as a manager of software development, it's very important that you understand the technical aspects as well. So in software engineering, we talk both of technical aspects as well as of managerial aspects. So this means, for example, that software engineering can be a good major also for students from other departments, as long as they have at least some knowledge of coding and the technical aspects. Why then are technical aspects and the knowledge of software engineering important from the point of view of managing software development? When you manage software development, you manage an organization of experts. These experts don't trust people who don't understand what the actual substance of a project is. So for you to be able to successfully manage software development projects, you need to be able to talk the language of the developers and understand the issues and things that they work with on a daily basis. So here is a formal definition of software engineering that is very often used. Basically, it's a reiteration of things we already said. So it's the establishment and use of sound engineering principles in order to obtain economically software that's reliable and works efficiently on real machines. So in software engineering, as an engineering discipline, we are concerned with real machines, real organizations, and real people, and how to make things happen in the real world. This is different in that sense from theory, in which we might theoretically prove something. In software engineering, we are interested in doing things rather than proving them. The IEEE definition of software engineering states that it's the application of a systematic, disciplined, quantifiable approach to the development, operation, and maintenance of software. That is the application of engineering to software. Systematic meaning we have a defined way of doing things instead of just trying to ad hoc figure out what to do. It's discipline, meaning that we also follow the actual procedures and models and methods that we have defined. And it's quantifiable in the sense that we can measure and objectively try to assess if we are successful or unsuccessful in our efforts. Finally, software engineering is also about studying the actual act of developing software. So that is the second bullet in the IEEE definition. Software engineering, as I mentioned, is about software development in a professional setting. So even though many people write small programs for themselves, for example, spreadsheets, data processing programs, and hobbyist programmers, professional development most typically is about writing software for somebody else. And this also means that we need to do things that we necessarily don't have to do when we develop software only for ourselves. So, for example, we need to do things like formally understanding what to build, meaning doing some kind of requirements, specifications, we might have configuration files, we might need user manuals, and so on. And we end up negotiating instead of just deciding ourselves what to do and when. Typically, software development, also in a professional setting, is about much larger programs than individuals would do. There can be millions or tens of millions of lines of code. For example, telecom systems might be extremely large and have tens or hundreds of millions of lines of code, meaning that there is no single individual who actually can even understand and grasp the whole system. Professional software development can also be about very small programs. For example, embedded software can be very small, but they can be very difficult to develop because they can be very critical. In almost all cases, professional software development is also about developing software in teams, not as individuals. These days, most software is developed in teams that are distributed all over the world. They can have several nations, several physical locations, people with different backgrounds, different cultures, and different skills, all working together to develop a software system. The size of these overall project teams can range from just a few people, a handful of people, up to several hundreds of people all working together on a single piece of software. And of course, as you understand, if we have hundreds of people working on a piece of software, that sets quite high demands on coordination, communication, design, and so on. And these are things we all deal with in software engineering. Regardless of the size of the project and the type of the product, there are certain activities, things that we do in all software development projects. This is one classification, there are indeed others. But first of all, we do software specification, that is basically where we try together with the customer or the end users, the customer and end users might even be different stakeholders, we try to define what to build. Try to understand what the software should do and what are the conditions under which it should work. Then, when we have done that, we do the actual development where we design and implement the software. Then we do software validation. That is when we test the software. We try to verify and validate and make sure that it works correctly and it solves the problem that it's intended to do. Finally, we have software evolution. That is when the software already has been taken into use by our client or customer, and we modify and or change it to make it meet the change requirements of the customer. It can be changes to hardware, changes to laws, or changes to the needs of the users. So we evolve and change the software and typically ship new versions of the software to the markets or to our specific customer. Another view of what software engineering is all about is given by the software engineering body of knowledge. This is a work that you can find easily on the internet. You just search for the software engineering body of knowledge. It lists what things are included in the field of software engineering. You can see here that software engineering has a set of knowledge areas, and these are the areas that we will talk about during this course. On the right-hand side of this slide, you can see that we also, in order to do software engineering well, we need knowledge from related disciplines like computer science, computer engineering, management, mathematics, project management, quality management, software ergonomics, and systems engineering. However, in this course, as in most other software engineering courses, while recognizing the need for these kinds of aspects, we focus on the areas listed here on the left. Requirements, that is understanding what to build, negotiating with stakeholders, users, customers, and so on. Software design, that is planning the software to build, how it's structured, how we will be able to implement the requirements. Then it's about construction, often referred to also as implementation, that is when we actually build the software system. Then it's about testing, how we make sure that the software meets the quality requirements that we have for it. We have maintenance when we evolve and maintain the system, correct any problems that it might have after testing, and also adapt it to new situations. We have configuration management, which is related to managing all the different versions of the software development artifacts, that is the source files, configuration files, etc. that we have. Then it's about software engineering process, which is about the way we develop software. So if you have heard about Scrum, extreme programming, the waterfall model, the rational unified process, and so on, these are things that we talk about when we talk about software processes. Then we have software engineering tools and methods, which are, for example, tools like Git we use for configuration management, or Eclipse, the IDE that we use for software development, as well as the compilers and Jira, for example, for backlog management. So we are also talking in software engineering about the tools we use for software development and for supporting software development. Finally, we have the knowledge area of software quality, which is related to having a quality policy in the organization, as well as doing inspections and reviews of software. One problem that we have in software engineering is that very much of what to apply of the existing methods and how is context dependent. So we have a wide variety of different types of systems that we work with and develop, and so there's no universal set of software techniques or tools or methods that it makes sense to apply every time. Instead, depending on our context, the product, and so on, we need to select suitable methods and tools and adapt them to our situation. For example, the type of application we develop, the requirements a customer had, the background or development team, all can influence what tools and techniques and methods we use. There are lots of classifications of different products, different types of products that we can use in software engineering. But here is one that is a very high-level classification of software products. We have generic products that we develop for the markets, not for single customers. Examples of these would be word processing programs, spreadsheets, video editing software, photo editing software, and so on. We don't have a single customer to talk to. We are not developing them for individual users and taking individual user requirements into account. Instead, we are working with mass marketing. Then we have customized software or bespoke software. That is software we develop for single individual clients. And that, of course, changes the process. Then we have a single or a set of clients that we can talk to. We have somebody who pays for whatever we do. Examples of this would be embedded control systems, traffic monitoring systems, lots of web applications these days are bespokely developed, and so on. So here we can see one difference when we talk about product specification. If we have a generic product for markets, the specification of what the product actually should do, it's owned by the organization who develops the software. Basically, if we are the organization developing the software, we can make all decisions ourselves about what to develop, when to develop it, how to develop it, when to ship it, and so on. For customized products, on the other hand, the customer who pays the bills owns the specification, the requirements to the software. And these requirements are not only product related, they can also be related to cost, to schedule, and so on. And that means that the customer, together with the development organizations, make the decisions about what to develop, when to develop it, how to develop it, and so on. There are also lots of different application types that we deal with in software engineering. We have standalone applications, we have interactive transaction-based applications, we have embedded control systems, we have batch processing systems, we have entertainment systems, we have systems for modeling and simulation. These systems, their types, and so on, and their implications for software engineering, that's described in the book, so it's good to do a quick walkthrough of that. However, the most important thing I want you to remember with respect to different types of software packages, different types of software projects, different types of systems, is the fact that we need to decide on a case-by-case basis what methodology to use and how to use to develop the software. So there are no universal models. That is the main point that I need you to remember. However, regardless of this, as I said, we have a specific set of activities that we need to do for all professional software development projects, regardless of the differences. However, we also have fundamental principles that we can use as a guideline when we develop software engineering methods and tools. First of all, we need to have a managed and understood process. So we don't want to have people do whatever that comes to their mind. We have a managed process that we understand and communicate. The actual process, the way we work, can vary depending on the software we do. The fact that we can depend on a software system and it performs to whatever requirements we have are typically also universally important aspects of software development. Dependability and performance are typically important also for all kinds of systems that we develop. Also, really understanding what a software system should do, the software specification and requirements are critical in all projects. The way we deal with this varies very much from writing formal specifications using mathematical notations to writing long, difficult documents of hundreds of pages that the customer signs off on, to using iterative, incremental, agile models in which we show the customer what we have developed, for example, every couple of weeks. All of these are different ways we can deal with the issue of making sure that we understand what the software system should do. Also, where appropriate, it very often makes sense to reuse different aspects of software development. It can be reused through libraries, reused through code, reused through models, and so on. But we typically can have a huge cost saving and gain significant quality benefits by using already developed models, code, and libraries rather than rewriting everything from scratch every time. So, to summarize this first part of the lecture, software engineering is an engineering discipline concerned with all aspects of software development, not only coding, but everything from understanding what to build, to building it, testing it, taking it into use, and then finally retiring the systems, as well as evolving the systems when they need to be evolved due to changes in requirements. In all software engineering, we need to deal with the high-level activities of specification, development, validation, and evolution. We have different kinds of systems, different kinds of teams, different kinds of customers, and so on. And all of these might require different approaches to tackling these basic high-level activities of software engineering. So in software engineering, we have a wide variety of tools, methods, and solutions to dealing with these basic activities. However, the universal principles discussed here are typically applicable to all kinds of software development projects. Let's now turn our attention to software engineering ethics. So as we already discussed, software engineering is much more than only technical matters. So software engineering as a profession involves wider responsibilities than simply the application of technical skills. This means that from an ethical point of view, it's important that we as software engineers behave in an honest and ethical, responsible way in order to be respected as professionals. And of course, ethical behavior, it's not only about following the law. It involves following a set of principles that are morally correct. So what then are the ethics issues that we need to deal with in software engineering? First of all, we have confidentiality. Confidentiality from an ethical point of view means that we should respect confidentiality of our clients, customers and employers, regardless of whether there is a formal NDA signed or not. With respect to competence, it's important that we don't misrepresent our own competence level, so we don't lie about what we know and what we don't know, but we present ourselves fairly and honestly. IPRs, or intellectual property rights, are central to software engineering. And we should be aware of local laws on governing the use of intellectual property. Software patents can be a nuisance even to software developers. However, we need to be aware of the legal status and the IPRs of software that we develop, and in particular on components that we use. Please also, it's important to remember that when you use open source components, there are strict IPRs related to that as well. So the open source licenses vary in the requirements that are legal requirements that might also be important from the point of view of the software that you later want to sell. Finally, we have here computer misuse. We should not use our technical skills to misuse other people's computers, for example, by playing games or disseminate viruses. So in the United States, we have the so-called IEEE ACM Code of Ethics. It's developed by these two important professional bodies. Members sign up to the code of practice when they join, and it contains 8 principles related to the behavior of and decisions made by professional software engineers, which includes practitioners, that is people who develop software in the industry, educators like myself, managers, supervisors, and policymakers, as well as students, trainees of the profession. There is a rationale, first of all, for the Code of Ethics, basically saying that computers have a very important role in all of human undertakings and societies today. And by teaching, analyzing, specifying, designing, developing, certifying, maintaining, and testing software systems, we as software engineers have a very important role in this. And because of this role, it's very important that we behave ethically, because we have significant possibilities to create harm, to do ethically wrong things that can affect societies, businesses, individuals in a variety of ways. So therefore, we need to be concerned with ethics in order to make sure that our efforts are good and what we do are used for good, for beneficial things. So the actual Code of Ethics looks like this. We have a preamble. I'm not going to read this through. You can do that yourself. But we have a preamble, and then we have the 8 ethical principles that we then as professional software engineers subscribe to. First of all, number 1, we should act consistently with the public interest. 2, software engineers, we act in a manner that is in the best interests of our clients, customers, and employer and consistent with the public interest. Three, with respect to product, we should ensure that the products and related modifications that we do meet the highest professional standards possible. So we are not supposed to do a sloppy job, we are supposed to do a professional job given the real world constraints. That is why we have here the highest professional standards possible. We shall maintain integrity and independence in our professional judgment, not be influenced by, for example, political or other aspects. Software engineering managers and leaders shall subscribe to and promote an ethical approach to the management of software development and maintenance. We shall advance the integrity and reputation of the profession, again, consistent with public interest. We should be fair and supportive to our colleagues. And the last point is extremely important, that is the lifelong learning that we need to do. As you know, the software engineering and software development is a field that develops very quickly. So in order for our skills not to be outdated, it's very important that we participate in lifelong learning, and we are also supposed to promote an ethical practice within our own profession. So this is what the ethical code says. Now, what are some dilemmas that we might run into? When might we actually need to think about these ethical issues? One thing that is, of course, interesting with these ethical issues is they are often dilemmas. There's no easy way out. It might not be possible in all cases for us to make the ethical correct decision without, for example, severe individual repercussions. For example, if our employer makes an unethical choice, we might be fired if we make the ethical decision. So these ethical issues are often dilemmas. Here we have some examples of ethical dilemmas. For example, disagreement with the policies of senior management related, for example, to how to sell software systems. Do we always low bid to get a contract and then charge lots later for changes? We know that we won't be able to sell to the price that we offer. This might be one example of a situation in which we might have a disagreement with respect to corporate policy. Another example here is that, for example, our employer acts in an unethical way. We have a safety critical system. We haven't tested it thoroughly, but due, for example, to contractual clauses and maximizing profit, we ship it anyway. What should you do as a software engineer? And the third point here is, what about participating in the development of weapons systems or nuclear systems? Is that something that is ethically difficult or not? I'm leaving these ethical dilemmas for you to think about rather than trying to answer them, because you can argue both ways. Then for something completely different. In the textbook, during all chapters, subsequent chapters that you will have, there are three case studies that will be used. We have a personal insulin pump used by people who have diabetes, that and we talk about the embedded system used by in the pump that helps us maintain blood glucose level. Then we have a mental health care patient management system, basically a medical database of patients that contains records of people receiving care for mental health problems. And finally, we have a wilderness weather station, which is a data collection system that collects data about weather conditions in remote areas. So please now do read quickly through these case studies as they are described in chapter one, so you know what these systems are all about as they will be used by subsequent chapters. And then let's have a quick summary of this part. First of all, we discussed software engineering ethics, saying that we as software engineers have significant possibility to do harm, and therefore it's important that we are aware of the ethics guidelines and the issues of ethics and try as much as possible to follow them and do ethically sound decisions in our professional life. Then we had the three case studies that I asked you to read: the embedded insulin pump, the mental health system, and the wilderness weather station.
And with that, we conclude this first substance lecture on software engineering. And I want to wish you the best of luck with reading the material and doing the exercises. In earlier course instances, writing the essays has been the most problematic thing for some students. And to help you there, I put up a short video explaining my expectations with respect to the essays. So please watch this for some more information about how to write the essays and how they are graded. And furthermore, in many early instances, many students start asking practical questions in the beginning of the course, practical questions that I actually covered already in Module 1. So please, therefore, I ask that you study the contents of Module 1 carefully, even if you perhaps did not do it before taking the quiz, before asking practical questions here in my courses. And in particular, I want you to be sure to read the referencing instructions carefully before writing your essay, as you will be penalized in the grading unless you use the exact guidelines provided there. So don't come up with your own way of referencing or reference in any other way than the instructions given in the referencing guidelines. Another thing that often comes up is how to make up for missed work or missed lectures. This is also well covered in Module 1, so please, if you have any questions with respect to that, go back to Module 1 and restudy it before asking questions related to making up for missed work in the course. And if you have any questions otherwise, please post them in the question and answer forum in my courses. I'll try to answer all questions, as I said in Module 1, within 24 hours. And if I don't manage to do that, please be patient. I'm checking the system every day, so you should basically get an answer quickly. If I'm traveling or for some other reason have difficulty accessing the system, please bear with me. I will answer you as quickly as I can. And if you, for some reason, have a question that you feel uncomfortable posting in the forum, you can also send it to me as a message in my courses, or you can email me directly. And finally, I want you to know that I'm constantly trying to improve the course. So please feel free to give me feedback at any time about how I could make the course an even better learning experience for you. Later in the course, I will also have some optional feedback tasks in the modules. And while they are voluntary, I'd really enjoy reading what you think about the course during the course, so I might take some steps to improve it even as we go along. So thanks very much. And with that, have a great week, enjoy the exercises, and see you next week. Bye for now.